If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, and welcome to Above the Fray. The number here, 914-803-4522. We welcome your calls. I'm Carol Gold, and I'm here with my co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Carol.
Let's talk about last night, because the country's talking about last night to some extent, at least part of the country is. Some of it would like to ignore what happened. But I watched the entire debate. I watched all the Republican debates. I watched the Democrat debate. I'm a firm believer in a little information can only help, not hurt. And the more you know, the more intelligent you can be about making your own decisions. So I watched the Republican debate, and coincidentally, I watched it with a Democrat. I watched it with a friend of mine and a neighbor, and she is a Democrat. And we watched the prior two debates together as well, and we also watched the Democrat debate. And when last night's debate ended, she turned to me and she said, "Now I understand all the talk about bias in the media." She said this was disgusting. She said they came at those candidates with an intention to make them fight with one another. The questions were all loaded. They were intended to create a problem. That's why they were phrased the way they were. And she said it's real. It's absolutely real. Now, of course, that's something we've known. Those of us on the who are conservatives have known for this isn't news. But it was great for me to see that it was so egregious that even, you know, a kind of a lifelong Democrat, lifelong leftist could not deny what she had witnessed. I heard people today on several different talk radio shows calling in and saying that they were already conservatives. They might have been Trump people, in fact, but last night they walked away for Cruz or Rubio because they began to see even through that sort of facade and the futility of continuing to back people who are not viable candidates. And I think what we saw last night, Steve, was not only the incredible bias of the media to the point where the curtain was pulled back and you could see the wizard, you know, working all the bells and whistles, but I think you got to see Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio in a way they haven't been seen before, especially Cruz. And I want to talk about that, Steve, but let's first talk about that bias.
About that what? I'm sorry?
Let's first talk about the bias.
Sure. Do you want me to go or you go ahead?
No, go ahead.
No, I thought it was interesting that it as you well stated, that we've known this for years, that it finally came out. I would say really what stuck in my mind is going, you know, the moment that I knew that the gig was up was from the first debate. And I don't know if you remember seeing this, but the moderator asked all the candidates at one point to raise their hands if they were not elected the Republican nomination, that they wouldn't run as an outside candidate. And so as he asked the question, I'm sorry, I forget the moderator. And I asked the question, it seemed to me a very demeaning question because it seemed the appearance that he left it was is that there are a bunch of schoolboys and he's the person asking the question is making them raise their hands like schoolboys saying, we're going to take a pledge that we're not going to do that. I thought right then and there that was such an egregious question to make them. Part of the question was egregious, but the second part was the intent to make them look like schoolboys. And from that point on, I knew that the Republicans weren't going to have a tough go at it. So I saw it last night, and I saw the interviews this morning. The whole intent was, as you said, was not to ask substantive questions. It was a point to get them to attack each other, more kind of like a ratings ploy. The thing that I think people need to, you know, be aware of is that the media wanted this for 3 hours. Trump and Carson said, listen, that's just a ridiculous format. They opted out. And I think the intent was not to ask substantive questions, but really was to get them to tear into each other. I think the second point behind that is the following. I think that not only one that shows a bias, but I think the second intent that people are not focusing in on is that by having everybody on the stage go through a hellacious primary fight, the person that comes out of that usually is not strengthened but actually weakened. So I think Cruz was very smart to call out everybody and say, listen, we're not here to attack each other. We're here to talk about substantive issues and to maybe clarify the point. And I think that's going to make a Republican Party much stronger. If there's weaknesses and points, they'll be exemplified. But I think it does a real disservice to the country and to the Republican Party that the candidates actually have to destroy each other to win. And I think that benefit only helps Democrats.
I think that Cruz was smart in more ways than one. I believe that the point you just hit on, that slug it out, down in the mud, primary, contentious kind of battle is what wears them down. I think Cruz has been very laid back, quite honestly. I don't think he's been in the fray. I think he sat back and let Carson and especially let Trump have it all, have the runner kind of positioning, because number one, I think Cruz knew he was going to be in it for the long haul. I think he prepared himself for the long haul. I think he's been building a framework and a donor base. I mean, he raised more money last quarter than anybody. I think he's been realizing all along that a lot of this would burn bright and burn out at some point. And if you remember, it was on this show, it was on this show that I said after the last debate, I believe Donald Trump's done. I believe he's over. And I saw it, and I knew the moment that I saw it, and I said the moment that I saw it on air, and I believe that's what's happening. His poll numbers are, in fact, declining. I don't think because of the kind of person that he is and the history that he has with his own personal successes on television, I don't think he'll stay in it as he continues to decline. I think he'll get out. And I think that Cruz has been building something that would go the distance. Now, Marco Rubio is interesting as well. My problem with Rubio is twofold. He's got two issues that make me uncomfortable. One is he was part of that Gang of Eight. He's incredibly pro-amnesty. And two, he's with the NSA spying. And yet, I'd crawl on my hands and knees to go vote for Rubio if he were the candidate, if who he was opposing was Hillary Clinton. I mean, I'd vote for Donald Duck if he was opposing Hillary Clinton. I'd vote for a chair. I'd vote for anyone. It astonishes me and it worries me that our nation, a good percentage of it, a dangerous percentage of it, doesn't seem to care that she lied and she was proven to have lied during those congressional hearings. I had someone write me today and say, he's a Democrat, and he said to me, you got to give her credit for the 11-hour extravaganza that she endured. You got to give her credit for that. And I wrote back and I said, I give her no credit for having perfected over a lifetime the art of lying, the art of manipulating, and the art of obfuscating. So it disturbs me greatly, on the one hand, that she will be the Democratic nominee, and because they have the demographics, because they have that built-in base of, what is it, 42 or 46% that are going to go to the polls and vote for her, she doesn't have much of a hurdle to outrun and win over any Republican candidate. Now, I would love to see Marco Rubio simply because I believe he is a masterful debater, as is Ted Cruz, Rubio, nobody knocks Rubio down that he doesn't get right back up. And I think he can devastate Hillary Clinton in a debate, but I think so can Ted Cruz. I don't think Ben Carson has a prayer against her. I think Carly Fiorina could give her a good run for her money, for sure. And it would be interesting to watch two women, but I don't think Carly Fiorina will get the nomination. I realize that I'm going down this road of looking at the candidates as opposed to looking at the event last night, the debate. But the same person who wrote me about Hillary and giving her credit for the 11-hour endurance run also wrote me and said, well, I watched it last night and it was just plain boring. Now, Steve, you've got a lot of noise on your end. Can you shut your mic off if you've got background people? What was I just saying? Steve, you've got a lot of background noise. Steve, can you cut your mic? Steve? Steve?
Carol, you just got, I lost you there.
Okay, did you cut your mic? You had a lot of background. There were people in your background. Were you able to take care of that?
I didn't hear anything. I think your side went dead, Carol.
Oh, that's really weird. Okay, well, what happened was obviously the Blog Talk Radio broadcast got messed up, and we actually heard people talking. It sounded like a woman and children were carrying on. So that was neither on CNN.
That must be a Blog Talk Radio issue.
Yeah, that's not neither Steve nor I. So let me try to pick it up. Do you know where I left off that you could hear, Steve?
You would say the last point that I'd heard was that Ben Carson probably doesn't have a chance. He'd already mentioned Carly Fiorina, and then that's where I got cut off.
Okay, so I went down the political line. I said I'd like to see Fiorina, have that debate, but I didn't think she'd have a chance. I went back to the email that I got from the person who said you have to give Hillary, points for enduring the 11 hours of congressional testimony. He also said to me, I watched it last night and it was just boring. Well, I think if you watched last night and you came away thinking it was boring, you are either – what you really want then is you want that cage fight. You want entertainment. You don't want issues discussed, because last night, number one, was anything but boring. I mean, anything but boring. And number two, what I wrote this person back was, do you hate them just because they're Republicans? Because do you actually know where they stand on issues? I know that most people who, to me, disparage the Republican field of potential candidates have no clue where they stand on their issues. It's not really substantive opposition or disapproval. It's an emotional or a purely ideological mindset that they're Republicans, I hate them, or they're all stupid. This field is anything but stupid. I mean, Ted Cruz has argued before the Supreme Court of the United States 9 times, and he has won 9 cases. I can tell you as an attorney, arguing a case in a courtroom in front of a local civil judge is stressful and hard enough and difficult enough to build your case. To go before the Supreme Court 9 times, up against some of the greatest opposition in the country, and prevail all 9 times, he's anything but stupid, and he's anything but boring, as he proved last night. So I think the problem, Steve, is that the media has been aware for a very long time, because they've been part of the machinery that has dumbed down the country, and the country watches this stuff not with issues in mind, but with ideologies and personalities in mind. And for that, I worry for the future of the country.
Yeah, a couple of things, Carol. The fact that most people don't talk about the election in the way that you just did is that any candidate that has to, that has to beat Hillary has to know that she starts with 42% or 46%. It's a ridiculous statement. It's a way of saying that the people are so stupid, the American people is so stupid, that just because she has a D in front of her name, people are going to vote for her. But that's the reality of of the society that we live in. And the media is very smart, and the opposition is very smart to this agenda, that all you have to really do is batter the candidate down, bang him up and beat him up a little bit, and make him sufficiently unappealing to the last, you know, percentage points of the voters for the Democrat to win, which is more than likely going to be Hillary Clinton. So I'll just say Hillary from here on out. So it really is, these guys really have an uphill battle. There was a telling point in the last election that Mitt Romney got a lot of grief for, which was the sheer fact that he just said it's very hard to win an election when half the population is receiving something. And they made fun of him, and they laughed at him, but it's about as true a statement as you can possibly get. Half the population gets some type of government assistance, and we're getting to a point where we're no longer going to have a kind of a free election or a free society when the election is, for the most part, completely rigged. The second point that I wanted to address, and that people say that we live in a democracy, but I think the only kind of real semblance that we have in democracy nowadays are the debates, seeing the candidates up there stating their positions and stating their words and stating their actions. So for the press to belittle it, I think does a terrible disservice to the country. Secondly, you know, if you look at the parliamentary style of debate in, say, England, the prime minister goes out there every couple of weeks or so, and he debates the opposition party, and there's a give and take of a back and forth where they go back and forth regarding their positions, and they state their positions, and they state it, and there's a real verbal jousting that goes on. But I think in some ways it's a great for the political process where your ideas are tested and to see if they're valid or not. If you just look at, like, the history of the United States, I mean, the last, you know, real president that kind of really did it was, you know, I don't know how old our audience is, but if you go back to the 80s, Ronald Reagan would go out and he would literally verbally joust with all the reporters for hours on end at the press briefings. The president would come out, and at the press briefings, there was nothing off limits, and he fought a combative press, and you were clearly, at the end of it, you understood where he stood on the issues. Sometimes you won, sometimes you lost, but there was a natural give and take. You know, if you look at Obama in the last, you know, over the last 8 years, there's very little that give and take because he doesn't want to be exposed. He's a guy that speaks from a teleprompter. And so getting back to just to round up this point is your comment that you made, that your friend said, oh, isn't this a great point? You know, she got grilled for 11 hours. Isn't she great? Well, that's really the only kind of semblance that we have of a democracy anymore, that we get to see the give and take, the back and forth of politicians going back and forth of debating their ideas and seeing where the truth lies. So for people to say, oh, she did great, I mean, we're at a point now, we're behind the wall now. We don't even get to see the wizard anymore. So I think those issues are great for the public to see. Unfortunately, they're too little too late now.
Well, you know, I take issue. I don't think we live in a democracy. I'm sorry. I think we live in a democracy. I think we were founded as a constitutional republic. But I actually think we've come to the point where we are a democracy, because a democracy is mob rule. That's what a democracy is. It's the majority gets to decide. And I think that's what the Democrats have created by all of the illegal immigration. They've created enough numbers. They've created enough Democratic voters who will vote Democrat simply because they're on the take, they're on the dole, and they're getting that free stuff that you referenced, that we are now mob rule. Because we are also mob rule when it comes to, you know, I had an incident today in my life that it just reminded me of what happened in Ferguson, and what happened in Baltimore, what happened with Occupy Wall Street. We've come to the point, and Ayn Rand, interestingly enough, wrote about this in a book called Return to I may have that book. It's not in front of me. It's Return to Primitivism. That's what it is. Return to Primitivism by Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand is a compilation of essays she wrote in the 1970s. And she wrote about what was beginning to happen in colleges in this country, and particularly at Berkeley where it began, which was that the students began to move toward violence and takeover of the administrative buildings in order to force upon the administration the way they wanted the university to run. And it really grew into, if you follow a thread from those early occurrences with academic violence, that began in our colleges in the 70s. You can follow that thread all the way up to not only Occupy Wall Street, but Ferguson and Baltimore, and how this country has come to believe, has come to take as a method of civic unrest, violence and bullying and brute force and boycotting. And so what I was going to say was, I had an incident today where my daughter, who is a commander in the Israeli army, my daughter was contacted by a website called The Financial Diet, and it's a website for 20s and 30s who want to, you know, be fiscally responsible. So they asked her to write an article, answer 10 questions on what it's like to live in Jerusalem financially. What are the financial challenges versus, you know, living elsewhere in the United States where she's from? She wrote a very comprehensive, very well-documented article, answered 10 questions. The post was really well done, and it was on their homepage this morning. I knew nothing about it. So she texted me, and she said, go to The Financial Diet. And I didn't know why. And she said, just go and look. And I opened it up, and there was my daughter's name, and there was the article on living in Jerusalem, the financial realities of living in Jerusalem. I think it was titled Living in Jerusalem and Not Going, How to Live in Jerusalem and Not Go Broke. 2 hours later, that article, that post was gone off of the homepage. It was the lead post for today. And I started getting back all these responses from, I had put it on my Facebook page, I had put a link into emails and sent it as a blast email to all my people, and I was getting back, the link doesn't work, it's an error. So I clicked the link, and the article was gone, and instead was an error message. Contacted my daughter by text, and I said, your article's gone. Why don't you reach out to the website that hired you, that asked you to do it? So she did, and then she texted me back, and she said, they took it down because of the vitriol that they were getting, and they didn't want to deal with it, and they didn't want to jeopardize me. Well, I wrote her back, and I said, I don't think they're concerned about you being jeopardized or harmed to you. Let's be realistic. You walk around Israel in an IDF uniform with an M16 slung over your back. I think you're in danger every day of your life based on what you've chosen to do. So they're really responding to their own economic issues, and they just didn't want to take the heat. So she wrote me back, and she said, well, one of the girls is actually Jewish, who's a founder of that site. I said, then doubly shame on her, because she should have fought with her other two partners, and if they wouldn't have allowed that article to stand, she should have resigned. She should have left the website. My point is this. Whether it's anti-Semitism globally, violence in the Middle East by Hamas and Hezbollah, or whether it's Black Lives Matter in this country, or Occupy Wall Street, or student riots, whatever it is, Steve, and to the listeners, obviously, we have become a nation that is intimidated by force. We are intimidated by force. This transmission on this show is awful. I hear all this background noise, and I'm sorry for my listeners, but it's not Steve, and it's not me. We have cowered to force, and force is different than power. We have forgotten as individuals how powerful we are and how particularly powerful we are living in a constitutional republic. But we've given up the Constitution, and we have succumbed to brute force, and that's why I say the Democrats have realized, the progressives in both party have realized, that we are silent in the face of what high school kids or grade school kids called bullying, but what at law is harassment and sometimes moves to the point of assault. We are silent, and we are cowardly, and we are succumbing to the lowest common denominator, and it will do us in, if it has not already, it will do us in. It is a warning, America. Steve?
The point that I think is that part of the reason why we do this show, and it's a debate that Carol and I have ongoing, is that it is a dire situation, and you know, this is our way of our voice getting out there to tell people the risks that are coming. It's more important to be aware of the issues than just to vote a party line, which is Democrat or Republican. So I think it's the media bias should be a big issue for you, for anybody that listens, because it's actually the way that the news is presented to you, and it's actually the way that you begin to interpret and read the world. And there's a lot of people out there that don't take the time to read and study the issues. And so when they see a trusted figure on television, they'll actually respond back to what they've heard. I've told this story before to Carol, but I worked in finance for many years, and my job was really to interpret the news in a new way for my clients to make money. It was really the nutshell of a finance professional. And I literally would have some of the smartest guys paired back to me because their belief system was such that they might be a hardcore, you know, liberal or conservative, but usually I would find it on the liberal side, that they would just pair it back whatever they saw on TV the night before, whatever those talking points were. And I was always dumbfounded that here were some of the smartest guys, supposedly in finance and in Wall Street, literally parroting back the points that they saw on TV. The point that I'm driving here is that we're all susceptible to, you know, media influence. I mean, there's a reason why advertising companies and media companies spend millions of dollars a year, because they know that it works. It's part of, you know, like in the movie The Matrix, it gets you sucked in. And so it's always a fight to analyze and interpret the news in a way that you really see what's happening. And last night was a classic case of the media trying to move the election in a direction that would benefit them. I want to just say one last point. The people debating last night, who were the moderators for the issues last night, is CNBC, which is a financial news network. They have a completely vested interest in
Absolutely.
The big bank theory, the big bank, you know, larger is bigger. That's who their audience is, and that's who they're going to cater to. So most of those candidates up there are a threat to that way of life and that system. So it's also, when you're looking at the news or seeing a person moderating the debate, you should always have a bias the other way, saying, you know, how is it benefiting the moderators as well?
Well, you make an excellent point. I was going to make it, but you made it for me. CNBC has a vested interest, and that's Wall Street. And number two, you know, people didn't know who those few odd people who jumped into the moderators' chairs, like Rick Santelli. Most people don't know who he is, and people reacted and said, who is this crazy guy who's like so animated and blah, blah, blah. Rick Santelli founded the Tea Party. And Rick Santelli asked financial questions that both Cruz and Rubio were able to give substantive answers to. So there were moments when it was really substance, and it's because Santelli is on CNBC. That's why he was there. But he came at it differently, and he gave the candidates an opportunity to answer a substantive question. But if you didn't know who he was, and you were bored, as my friend was bored, because again he was looking for a fight, and he was looking. It's like why people, I think, go to. I always say that's why people go to ice hockey games. They don't go for the sport; they go for the fight. And I think a lot of people watch these things for that very reason. They want the battle, they want the entertainment, and they get it when they've got a Donald Trump. But when they have someone like a Ted Cruz or a Marco Rubio who's trying to give them substance, who's trying to tell them what's really going on, they tune it out, because they, like you said, Steve, they don't want to do the heavy lifting, they don't want to do the research, they don't want to know the deep end of the pool, and as a result, they wind up as sheep. And then they say, how did this happen to us? How did this happen to the country? Well, it happened because you abdicated responsibility for the very things that you were supposed to take responsibility for as voters, as citizen voters in a constitutional republic. 27 seconds, we're out of time. Stephen, I thank you for listening. We'll be back again next Monday night here at Above the Fray podcast. Until then, think for yourself. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.